I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
It is 2:34. Chad Hartman back here with you on WCCO. Please be joined by the governor of the state, Tim Walz. Governor, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you coming on.
Hi, Chad. Thanks for having me.
Let's get to a number of topics. Let's start with the Chauvin trial. You have worked with many members of your own administration, and you have proposed a bill, the SAFE account, where a total of $35 million would be created in a fund to help any community that requests mutual aid from other law enforcement agencies and then is stuck with a bill it cannot pay. This would affect a lot of areas, but clearly the Chauvin trial starting in Minneapolis on March 8th was the main impetus for this decision. As of now, you don't have a bill passed in the House. In the House, the Democrats did not have all Democrats on board. And even though Melissa Hortman has control of that, and if she had all of her members vote in favor, the bill would have passed. They did not have it. Where do you stand right now? Are you in favor of the bill that Speaker Daudt has offered up? Do you have some feelings on where members of the Democrats who voted against this bill? And should Minnesotans feel like a bill is going to pass in time so all the money is available for security when the trial starts?
Yeah, well, I would start out, first of all, to let Minnesotans know is regardless of what the legislature does, we'll provide the security. There's a lot of events happened this year that happened spontaneously. This is not one of those. We've had many months to plan, which we've done. It's a broad joint operation between sheriffs, of course, the police, state patrol, other DPS agencies, DNR, and of course, National Guard as part of that. And so we will do what we need to do. I simply think it makes good sense. I know folks help out, neighbors help neighbors. We saw it in Buffalo with the tragedy of a shooting, and agencies, you know, in Minnesota might not have a bomb squad, and Minneapolis did. And what I'm simply saying is I think it makes sense. The legislature did this around natural disasters, and it makes great sense. We have a localized natural disaster that doesn't qualify for federal aid. These communities still need help, and we've done that numerous times. And I just made the case that this would help with the mutual aid agreements if communities are going to send their firefighters, if they're going to send their police to help in preventing. And that's what this is all about. This is preventing a situation from reoccurring like we saw in May and across the country to help out. So I again, know better than I have to manage the executive side of things. The legislature takes time. It is a slow process. We gave them a lot of lead on this. The one thing I'll say is that folks wrote me, Republicans in the Senate wrote me and said to fund this in December. So I crafted up, built the team, did it, and then they changed their mind again. I think Leader Daudt's coming up with a workable solution. I understand the frustrations on all sides of this, but I also simply can't spend my time in the intricacies of the politics around policing at this point in time. I simply have to make sure that folks are safe. They have a safe place to exercise their First Amendment rights, but you are not going to harm property or people.
So let me jump into that, because Speaker Daudt believes that their bill deals with the here and now, and what members of the Democratic Party want is points of police reform, and he believes that should be dealt with later. If the bill that Speaker Daudt has proposed was on your desk, would you sign it?
Sure, I would. And I, if they can find a way.
Do you think you should advocate for that with the Speaker of the House, Melissa Hortman, and say, Melissa, let's, in this case, go with former Speaker Dowd's bill, the minority leader, and let's get something passed right now?
Yeah, well, things aren't always as simple as they seem. And what I would say is the Speaker knows her members, her caucuses, and that better. I simply will sign something if it comes over. But I do want to acknowledge, and I think this is the one that's hard for people to wrap their mind around. I think that logic that the leader's using is good. But the one thing is, when these pieces of legislation move, they're always points of leverage. And these folks are saying, wait a minute. This thing got kicked off with an incident involving the police and a black man. And now what you're telling us is we haven't really done much around reforms, but we're going to fund more of this. That's the argument made. And I'm not saying I one way or another, other than I think there's valid points across this. I do think this idea that we have to deal with the here and now is a priority. And that's the way I'm approaching it. I don't have the luxury. And I think, and I have made the case, I advocated for the reforms that we passed earlier in the summer, and I'll advocate for more of them. But there is a date certain, March 8th, that this is going to happen. And there will be a date certain later in the spring when a verdict will be coming down. And we need to be prepared for the emotions that will surround that. And I want to create a space where people can express their emotions, whichever side they come down on this. Justice needs to be served. And then our responsibility is to make sure that the community is safe.
One last point on this, and then we'll get to other matters. You do know this, though. If you, as the governor, come out and publicly and privately say to Speaker Hortman, I think we should go with this bill, it would happen. You acknowledge.
I don't think
that's
that. Well, influence. I would. I've been in this business a long time, Jed. I would not necessarily say as such, because I was very clear the bill I put on the table that should have been palatable for both sides, and it was significantly changed across the border. It was significantly changed across all the spectrums. And I don't think there's a guarantee yet that the Senate would necessarily pass that. Because they're taking a different situation. They're saying, no, we're not giving any money. So it is not that simple. I have made very clear that I said the legislature should do this. And I said this week and sent them a letter, while you guys work this, quit asking my National Guard generals and officers, quit asking the State Patrol to come in and testify. You know exactly what we need. We've laid it out. It's been there. Let us do the work. And as you've seen, structures are going up in place. Community outreach is happening. And this is going to happen. So I have made it very clear. So it is not quite that simple that it would go on either side. This has become highly politically charged, which, again, I don't say that as a pejorative. That's just a fact. My job, though, is to make sure that public safety is kept and that people's First Amendment rights and human rights are respected as we move into this trial.
Let's move into vaccinations here. Definitely has increased in the state. You announced last week that we've passed over 1 million individuals who've been vaccinated. You've talked about the last couple of days, you and Jan Malcolm and others, that as the numbers continue to uptick with seniors, that you would look at other individuals, compromise, and other essential workers. There's been pushback, including from Republicans, saying that right now we're still below 50% for all seniors to be vaccinated, and that we shouldn't pivot away from seniors, the 65 and older, until we get almost every senior vaccinated. Do they have a point? Should we be concentrating on the 65
absolutely.
And older crowd and then get to everybody else?
Absolutely. I agree with them. And I would point out we're now ninth in the nation in vaccines per capita. Seven of the states ahead of us are much smaller. In fact, six of them are combined make the population of Minnesota. We're also now 35th in deaths per 100,000, and we have one of the lowest infection rates. And they're absolutely right that you target, and it's why we targeted essential healthcare workers and 65 and above. Our death rates in those areas have come down. In fact, we almost have no cases whatsoever, especially in massive amounts of long-term care facility. So they're right. We're not pivoting out now. What we're saying is that it's irresponsible not to plan ahead. The vaccine allotment coming to Minnesota is greater. There'll be a move on Friday. The Johnson & Johnson vaccines, I think, will be in Minnesota by the second or third week of November. And what we're trying to do this week is to provide Minnesotans a pretty clear within a few weeks, as long as allotments keep coming the way they are, I think they'll increase. We're able to get folks in. And what you don't want to do is, we're not going to stop dead on this. Just to be clear, we're not pivoting away until 70% of folks are there. And just to be clear.
Is that a high enough number?
Yeah, just 80% is a high uptake rate. We don't know how many of those seniors aren't even in the state right now. This is just a set number. What we should be looking at is that the hospitalizations and the death rates among 65 and above is almost lower than any place in the country right now. So the vaccination for impact is working. If I'm sitting on 200 or 300,000 vials while I'm waiting to get the last few seniors through, I'm jeopardizing the safety of others who fall into high-risk categories like active cancer treatments, COPD, different things that are happening there. So we're not saying we're pivoting away and leaning away from them. We are vaccinating faster than almost any state in the nation, vaccinating 65 and above almost faster. Our highway now is a two-lane highway moving very fast. I'm not asking that lane to slow down at all. I'm asking to add another lane. And that's where we get ready. That will come online somewhere in mid to late March. And that next group will be high priority conditions and essential workers in locations where they are at high risk. And then we'll move through those in a matter of about 2 weeks or so. And we will add another lane. We won't have every single one of those essential workers in the category we have, but we will certainly have 70% plus more. And again, I remind folks of this. 100% of seniors, if they're saying, I'm saying 70% of them need to be vaccinated. 20% are not taking it. That's their choice. So yes, that's what CDC recommends. Again, I would say compare us to this. The vaccination that we're doing are the effect we're having from hospitalizations and deaths. And there are a couple of states that have chosen to just stay in the 65. We're performing better. So I think this is the way to go.
Let's talk about the vaccine connector, which has rolled out recently. And the turnout and people signing up in the state has included hundreds of thousands. Part of what has become controversial, including in a hearing today with Jan Malcolm, is some of the questions asked, in particular the question about someone's sexual orientation. I know when any of us sign up for different things in our life, we're asked a number of questions. But why isn't this an intrusion of our privacy on something we're signing up from the government for a good cause, a cause I believe in? But why is this anybody's business, and why should anybody have to check a box or pass on that box?
Yeah, first of all, to get tested and get vaccinated in this state, you don't need to do – you're not going to be billed. We're using this data because when we're not able to do this, the stories we've been getting is that the equity around this vaccine is not equal. Some communities have a harder time connecting. They don't have a doctor that they normally go to. They don't have a pharmacy. And in fact, if you're from certain communities, you're very distrustful of vaccines, especially in the Black community where you've seen, you know, unconscionable experimentation happen on folks. That is a long historic trauma that's with them. And we're trying to gather the data to make sure that we are doing equitable distribution about this. What I can guarantee you is if you show up and need to get a vaccine and you don't feel like sharing, you can certainly do that. But I also think to let folks know is that makes it more difficult for us to know, are we getting to the right communities? Are we getting equity as built into this? But it's not an intrusion of privacy. This is the least friction of anything, and especially on the testing. But it helps us to do a better job of it.
I have not signed up for it yet. That's on me. If I sign up for it later today and I decide that's none of anybody's business, I'm still on the list?
Everybody will be on the list, yes. And I need to...
But on this particular list, if I say, I don't want to turn this over, do I still qualify?
Yes. And I will go back and verify to see if, you know, like if sometimes if you filled out many forms on there, if you don't put your initial in the middle, it kicks you out or whatever. I'll go make sure to verify. But this is not about trying to, you know, big data to capture it. In fact, for me, one of the issues was what about people who were concerned about their immigration status? And what we knew was there were a large number of those working in very confined facilities in food processing plants. And we don't want to scare anyone in a health crisis from coming in and getting it. But I'll make sure my team verifies for that, Chad. But I think for your listeners to know is we're not doing this to try and gather. But the situation is right now, we're vaccinating folks as a percentage of the population, the white population, higher than other, and there could be numerous reasons. And one of it is that, think about this, Chad, in the world that we're in right now, how quickly this has happened. It's an amazing story. The previous administration is part of that amazing story of getting this vaccine and getting it out. I'm already planning for, and this is not too many weeks down the road, where I'm going to be setting on vaccines, and I'm going to have to be figuring out ways to get people to trust it to take it so that we can get to herd immunity. And those are the things we're thinking about right now. Which of those communities are not taking it? Why are they not taking it? Are we getting it to them? So I will make sure we verify on the site itself, but I want to assure all your listeners, it's more to make sure that equity and vaccinating for effect, but you show up and it's your turn to get vaccinated. You get vaccinated, and those are your personal data. This always happens with HIPAA requirements, and this is not a violation of that. It's simply a way to make sure that we're getting all populations.
All right, we got about 4 or 5 minutes left. We can get to a couple other points. That'd be great. Governor Walz is with us. This is probably the number one point I get, Governor, on COVID, and clearly the last couple months, this state and the country has made great progress. But people compare Minnesota to Wisconsin. I looked at the current data. Our positivity rate is 3.1%. That is so much better than months ago. The Wisconsin positivity rate is 2.8%. The death count is pretty close. For folks who say that Wisconsin has had businesses and restaurants and schools open much sooner than Minnesota, and that their positivity rate and death count is fairly close to Minnesota, and they think we should have looked more at the Wisconsin model, especially to help out businesses, you say what?
Well, economically, we have a lower unemployment rate. Also, they have over 100,000 more, 25% higher, that had the infection. We do not yet know what the long-term impact of this will be. What happens when you get pneumonia in 2 years and it's coupled with having had COVID? So I would say that. I would also say it's not an apples to apples on the differences. You could take a look at North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa would be a little better on how they went a different way. I would remind listeners that 3/5 of the population in Wisconsin are under the same type of decisions we made here in Milwaukee and Madison. They have local masking. They have local limits in restaurants and bars. And the fact of the matter is that in terms of economic growth and economic activity, they're very equal. So Minnesota and Wisconsin, for the bulk of the population, took a very similar path. Minnesota and South Dakota took a very different path. And had we followed that, we would be looking at, instead of 6,000 deaths, we would be closer to 12,000 deaths. And instead of the number of cases that we have, we would probably be doubled on where they're at. So I think for your listeners to know, when you take Milwaukee and Madison out and you have 3/5 of the population, basically, that's where that impact is showing closer to it. And as far as things being open, Minnesota has always been in the top quarter of activities being open. And in fact, we will be one of the most, as you know this, one of the states that has all of our schools back in. And we did it safely because we're one of 8 states that chose to prioritize that and vaccinate our educators. So there's a lot of second guessing that goes on. I would never claim to you, Chad, that every decision was made right as COVID played out. But I will tell you that every decision was based on the data, and it was based on the protection and the health of what we know. And I do think, I hope we're right. I hope there aren't any long-term impacts, but us being ranked 31st in infections and 35th in deaths per 100,000, that's what's going to get measured by. And again, economically, yes, this hurt disproportionately, and we need to continue. And I think the federal government's going to pass a piece of legislation that will really help. And now we're on our way that I anticipate you're going to start to see a pretty rapid return to the things that we want to see return to.
Last thing, you mentioned that nobody's going to be right all the time during COVID. I got about 60 seconds or so left. What was the one decision you made that if you could go back, you would change it?
I think we'd have masked sooner and tried to make that case. I wish I could have got bipartisan support on that. I think nationally, will go down as that decision to politicize masking. And I don't know if there's more I could have done. I wish I would have simply tried earlier to do that. And then I think, you know, in retrospect, what we know now of places where this stuff spreads faster and where we can control it more, I think our dial turn was the right way to go. But to try and adjust those. And if we could have got buy-in, we could go up and down quicker rather than, you know, the traumatic nature of folks saying, well, we can't go. Because I'm glad we did what we did in November and December. It was painful. But that's why we're in school, and that's why death rates bottomed out.
Governor, appreciate you answering all the questions. Thanks so much for coming on. We'll reach out again.
Thanks, Chad. Talk to you soon.
The governor of the state, Tim Walz, here on CCO.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.